We thank you for listening to the weekly sermon of First United Methodist Church, Missouri City, Texas. We're a church that's making disciples of Jesus Christ for the transformation of the world. For more information about the church and its ministries, or how we can pray for you, visit us on the web at fumcmc.org. If you desire to make a quick contribution in support of our ministries, you can text to give. Simply text the amount you want to give to 281-369-4870 and follow the instructions. And now, as you listen, we hope that you find this podcast meaningful and transformational in your journey of faith.
So there's a story in the Bible that I love. And I'm going to, one of these days, on one of the Sundays where I don't have a series, I'm going to preach this story because those of you, not that I'm naming any names or pointing in any direction or anything, but those of you who fall asleep in church, the Bible tells you that it's hazardous to your health to sleep in church. It's in the, hey, I'm not making it up. It's in the book of Acts. Am I making this up?
No.
See, the scholar has spoken. See, there's a story in the book of Acts about a guy, about a young man by the name of Eutychus. Eutychus is a slave laborer, if you will, and which means 7 days a week he's working all day, and he's working hard all day. And on this one particular Sunday that Luke records, Eutychus is in church because that's where he wanted to be after working all day. Now, what you have to understand is in the first century church, it was like being United Methodist in East Texas. Because anytime the church would gather, there'd be a big potluck supper, right? And so on this day, Eutychus went, he had worked all day, it was hot, and he ate a lot. Now, I don't know about you, but a combination of working all day and eating a lot on a hot day begins a recipe for disaster, right? So Eutychus does that, and at the church that night, there was a guest preacher. Paul, the apostle, was the guest preacher. Those of you who complain that I preach too long, my sermons look like two-minute devotions compared to how long Paul preached. Paul believed in this idea, what I like to say, that sermonettes, short sermons, make Christianettes, little Christians. And so in his mind, I guess, the longer he preached, the better follower of Jesus you would be, and he preached. Now, this wouldn't have been a major mistake for Eutychus, except for his choice of seating. Now, I don't know if he chose this seat or if it was the only one left, but he ended up sitting by an open window, two or three stories high. Long day working, hot sun, big meal, long-winded preacher equals sleep. Sleep by an open window equals disaster. Eutychus falls out of the window, hits the ground below, and is declared dead. So for those of you who fall asleep in church, I am telling you, it is hazardous to your health. It can kill you. Now, the problem is, with the exception of just a couple, most of you don't sleep in church. That's not our danger. What we're endangered of is falling asleep with our relationship with Jesus. Because let's just be honest. Those of us who have been in church for a while, those of us who grew up in church, those of us who hear week in, week out on a regular basis, it is easy for us to take our faith and put it on autopilot. Put it on, let it just go. We begin to lose that spark, that energy that we had about our faith when we first found Jesus. That's what happens. We begin to take that relationship for granted. And what I'm calling us to this year, what I've made a commitment to, what I've made a commitment and to God and now to you, is that in 2018, I will do all I can to not fall into that trap, to not be guilty of putting my relationship with Jesus on autopilot, to not be guilty of putting it on cruise control, for taking it for granted, but to try to ignite that spark I had when I first fell in love with him. That's my commitment. And what I'm saying is, that's a challenge to you. What I'm calling us to is to be radical, radical Christians. Now, radical, not fanatical. Where's enough fanatical Christians in the world? We need radical Christians. And I'm looking at what the word radical really means. Word radical comes from the Latin meaning from radicalis, which literally means the root of or from the roots. That's what it means. And it's where we get our word radish. Radicalis is where you get our word radix, where we get our word radish, and we know radish is nothing but a big root. It's going back to the very beginning, to those things that are essential core beliefs of what we declare as followers of Jesus. That's what it's about. That's how we're kicking off this year. And so I start thinking, well, what is the core belief of the Christian faith? I mean, what does it live and breathe? What was the core message of what Jesus preached? What was the root of all of Jesus' preaching? And I found a C.S. Lewis story that answered the question. Apparently, there was this debate. This theological group had gotten together with theologians and scholars, and they were debating at length what made the Christian faith different than Hindu or Buddhist or Muslim or Jewish or any other of the world religions. And they began this loud argument debate in a room like this, and they were arguing and speaking over each other, and C.S. Lewis walks into the room, and he says this. He says, and I just love this line, and I want to use it every chance I get. He walks in, and he says, "What's all the rumpus about?" I just love that word rumpus because none of us ever use it. In fact, I challenge you this week to use rumpus one time correctly in a sentence. What is all this rumpus about? Well, they finally told him, and he just laughed at them, and he said, "The difference between Christianity and all the others, it's simple. That's easy. It's grace." And that's the truth. At the core and at the root of everything Jesus preached is this understanding of grace. And I'm going to give you my definition of grace. And if you just get this out of the rest of the year, you win. Grace is that unconditional, unearned, unmerited, undeserved gift that God gives you. You got it? You ready? Let's try it. Unconditional, undeserved, unearned, unmerited gift from God. It's what I teach. Unconditional, unearned, unmerited, undeserved gift that God gives. That's grace. And that's at the core of everything. It's at the root of what we believe. And if we don't grasp that, we get nothing. There's a chapter in the Bible, Corinthians 13. You know that one? That's called the love chapter because it's read at weddings, and it should never be read at a wedding because it's not that kind of love. And so I always cringe when a bride says, "Hey, can we read 1 Corinthians 13? Sure, if you let me read it in the original language and we use the word love the way Paul used it, which would be charity, changes the whole meaning. But not only is there a chapter on love in the Bible, there's a chapter on grace. I like to call it the grace chapter. So if you have a Bible, open it to Luke 15. It's right here. And it's not on the screen, because every once in a while, I'm just not going to put it on the screen just to make you guys get used to bringing a Bible just for fun. So if you have your Bible, open to Luke 15. If you don't, just, hey, how are you? He's fine. Leave him alone. Hey, would you hold this? Thank you. Okay. Chapter 15, verse 3. So Jesus told this parable, which one of you having 100 sheep and losing one of them does not leave the 99 in the wilderness and go after the one that is lost until he finds it? And when he has found it, he lays on his shoulder and he rejoices. Now, you get that? The first one is about a lost sheep. The shepherd leaves 99, finds the one, and has a celebration, rejoices. That's an image of God's grace. That's one. Two, verse 8. Or what woman having 10 silver coins, if she loses one of them, does not light a lamp, sweep the house, search carefully until she finds it, and when she has found it, she calls together her friends and neighbors, saying, rejoice with me, for I have found the coin that I lost. That's two. So far you have a shepherd losing a sheep and finding him, and a woman losing a coin and finding it. With me? That is known as grace. Here's a third one. We know this one. There was a man who had two sons. The younger of them said to his father, Father, give me the share of the property that will belong to me. Now, the son likes to get, we like to give the younger son a lot of grief over this, but it wasn't an uncommon practice in first century for the youngest son to ask for his share of the inheritance before the father died, because what he got was very little. And this way he could go and invest it and be okay, because the oldest son got everything almost. Youngest son got very little. So the dad divided his property between them, and a few days later, the younger son gathered all he had, traveled to a distant country, and there he squandered his property in desolate living. And when the son had spent everything, a severe famine took place throughout the country, and he began to be in need. So he went and hired himself out to one of the citizens of the country, who sent him to his fields to feed the pigs. Now, what's wrong with that picture? Jewish boy feeding pigs? Doesn't go well, right? Pigs are unclean to the Jewish faith. So if a Jewish person touched a pig, they would then be unclean. If they were feeding pigs, they would be ultra unclean, right? Say yes. No, not you. Yes. Good job. You're doing good. I lost my place. Great. Where am I? Pigs. Oh, but when he came to himself, the actual Greek is my favorite because that's what my mom used to say. When he came to his senses, mom used to ask me when I was going to come to my senses, he said, how many of my father's hired hands have bread enough to spare, but here I am dying of hunger. I will get up, go to my father, and I will say to him, Father, I have sinned against heaven and before you. I'm no longer worthy, but you call your son. Treat me like one of your hired hands. So he set off, went to his father. I love this. But while he was still afar off, his father saw him, was filled with compassion, and ran and put his arms around him and kissed him. Now, what I love about that is before the kid said one word, the dad kissed him, hugged him, welcomed him. Most of us would have at least had one I told you so in there. Not this guy. And then the son gives his speech that he had been practicing, which didn't matter because dad wasn't listening anyhow. And then the father said to his slaves, quickly bring out a robe and put it on him, put a ring on his finger, sandals on his feet, and get the fatted calf and kill it. For my son that was dead is alive, his lost is found, and we're going to celebrate. That's grace. That's the heartbeat of what it means to be a follower of Jesus. Now, I saw this story. I was reading a book about grace, and I always understood grace to be that unearned, unconditional, unmerited, undeserved gift that God gives. But there was a story told by a Korean lady about her childhood that really hit this home. In Korea, after the Korean War, there was a rash of pregnancies of Korean women and American soldiers. And they would give birth to these mixed child. And the American soldier to go back to the States. And the Koreans who had the children would be ostracized. The children would be ostracized. The mothers would be ostracized. They'd be put out on the streets. They would be put out as far away from the city as possible. They were ignored. They were ridiculed. In fact, when people saw them on the street, they would use the worst word in the Korean language. They would call them tagugis, which means alien devil. And so this little girl was on the streets. And everywhere she looked, anytime she ran into anybody, she would be abused. She would be taken advantage of physically. She would be ostracized. She'd be ridiculed. She'd be made fun of, and she'd have names made. And so this little girl at an early age began to believe that she wasn't good enough, that she wasn't worthy, that she had no value, that she was barely human. And an orphanage found her and brought her in. And when the orphanage brought her in, she still was not sure of who she was or what she was. And then one day, an American family is coming over to adopt a boy. And then she tells a story. And this is what she says. She said, it was like Goliath had shown up. This man with the huge hands picked up every child, looked him in the eye, and he had tears running down his cheek. And she believes that if he could have, he would have adopted all of them. And then, her words, he looked over at me because I was in the corner. I barely weighed 30 pounds. I had worms on my body, lice in my hair, and boils all over my skin. I was not a pretty sight. And that man with the huge hands walked over to me. I looked up at him, and he took my face in his hands, and he said, I want this child. This is the child I want. That's grace. See, when I read that, I began to understand grace in a whole new way. Because I began to really get that that's what Jesus did with me. He looked past everything that was wrong with me. He looked past what I had done wrong. He looked past my sins. He looked past my failures. He didn't care about my warts or my lice or my worms. And he took my face in his hands, and Jesus said to me, I want you. You're the child I want. And that's what changed my life. And I know some of you, just like I do still, have a hard time really buying into this grace thing, right? We come to church and we dress up and we look real nice. But we like to think, well, grace is good for that person, but if you knew what I did, no way. I like to call it self-cannibalism, where you eat yourself up. You begin to believe what other people say about you. You begin to believe that somehow you're defined by your failures, by your divorce, by your mistakes, by your failed business, by whatever you fail. You begin to define yourself that way. And so you don't believe that grace is actually possible for you. Well, the good news is that the stories in Luke 15 about a shepherd finding a sheep, a woman finding a coin, and a dad finding a son, they're not only stories in the Gospels, they're your story. And they're my story. And the same God who put every star in the sky, the same God who created all of this, that God, I mean, get this, that God takes your face in his hands and he says, I want this child. He says, I want you. It doesn't matter where you've been. You are the child I want. Since before the foundation of the earth was laid, you are the child I choose. That's grace. That's the gospel. And unless you believe that, every sermon we preach during the rest of this series won't matter. Because if you can't believe that the God of the universe chooses you, then you will never be a radical follower of Jesus, because you'll never get the root of what it means to be a follower of Jesus.